Welcome to the sixth episode of the NASCAR on NBC podcast. I'm your host, Nate Ryan. Thanks again for listening. We have our first repeat guest on the program this week with Parker Kligerman, who, in addition to being Camping World Truck Series points leader, also happens to be an NBC Sports analyst. And we talked to Parker a couple of weeks ago about how his season has gone, his return to trucks. Obviously, it's gone about as well as he could have expected so far. So we touch on that again in this episode, but this is really more about a recap of the season and hitting on some hot button issues in NASCAR, specifically the Sprint Cup Series, although we also talk about the Xfinity Series a little bit. The goal of this podcast certainly will be to have personalities on every week to talk about their lives, their careers, and whatnot in NASCAR, in stock car racing. But we also want to take time to recap what we've seen developing on the track and off the track during the course of the season. So that's what Parker and I do this week. We cover a number of topics, and several of them he has great insight into. We talked a lot about Las Vegas winner Brad Keselowski. Parker Kligerman drove for Brad Keselowski, was a teammate of his at Team Penske, so he has some good insight into his personality and what he's gone through in this recent 33-race winless streak that ended at Las Vegas. Talked a little bit about the lower downforce package. For the most part, I think positive reviews at Las Vegas. Parker has a really good way of putting things in layman's terms, as he does on NASCAR America on a regular basis. So he talked a lot about what he saw from that lower downforce package and why he thinks it was a success both at Atlanta and Las Vegas, and maybe where NASCAR could go next. We talked a little bit about Furniture Row Racing's appeal and then withdrawal of appeal on crew chief Cole Pearn. We touch on the strategy of that. And finally, also talk about Phoenix, what we're expecting this weekend. Kevin Harvick certainly entering as a favorite. Parker talks about if that's going to remain the storyline, even with the lower downforce package. And Parker also had some interesting thoughts on the Xfinity Series and why things are different this year. They might look the same if you just look at the winner's column, but he feels as if you look beyond that and look at the concept of the playoffs coming into this series, things have changed quite a bit. So let's get to it. Without further ado, here's our guest, Parker Kligerman. Okay, joined again by Parker Kligerman for the second time on the NASCAR NBC podcast. We got great response last time to his appearance, so we appreciate him coming back. And Parker, before we get started, I think we got to start here. I mean, still the Truck Series points leader. Hey, that's got to feel good.
Hey, that is good. And you know what? We get to milk it for about 4 weeks in total in this whole deal. So, I mean, literally, if we can come out of Martinsville as the points leader, then there's another, like, 3 or 4 weeks after that. I might hold the longest points lead with the fewest amount of races ever in the sport. So, yeah. But we have a slim lead over Hemric, though. It's only 1 point. So it'll be a tough tall order to hold on to it.
Hey, all that matters is that number one ranking. And
exactly.
Before we get to it, I'll just ask you, I mean, has it made any difference? I know last time you were saying the plan was 6 races and then kind of see where the team is at. I know it's a smaller team. Has it had any impact in terms of scheduling or sponsorship?
Man, I tell you, there's a saying in racing, and you'll know this, and everyone talks about it, winning fixes everything. So we haven't won, but being in first place, it's something that involves what you're doing in the racing realm matters a lot. And I think, you know, for our sponsors, Valvoline, Advanced Auto Parts, Black Tire Service, it just gets everyone so pumped up. The team, you know, my owner, Ricky Benton, he's absolutely ecstatic and over the moon right now to, you know, see what we're doing. And I think, you know, it just gets everyone feel positive and to have positive vibes and, you know, positive attitudes can hopefully breed more success and more people want to be a part of that. So we'll see. I think everyone just, you know, we've already made some commitments and changes to be even better come Martinsville and especially Dover and Kansas and Charlotte. So, you know, we're going to go out there and try to win one of these things in the next 4 and see what happens.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we'll certainly be keeping an eye on you in the Camping World Truck Series. For now, though, we've certainly been keeping an eye on the Sprint Cup Series and wanted to bring you in and talk a little about what we've seen through 3 races of the 2016 season. And we're going to start, of course, with Brad Keselowski's win at Las Vegas. Parker is no stranger to Brad Keselowski. He was a teammate of his at Team Penske. He also drove for him as well. So I think he's got some special insight into Brad and the makeup of the 2012 champion. And one I wanted to start with, Parker, is I'm sure that many listeners have seen this, but his spotter, Joey Meyer, after the race, talked a little bit about with ESPN.com's Bob Pockris, talked a little bit about how Brad Keselowski had been ornery over the last year. And the reason for that was, as Joey Meyer explained, he knew that Joey Logano, his teammate, has the exact same equipment, exact same cars. And this was Brad Keselowski's first Sprint Cup win in 33 races, whereas Joey Logano, of course, led the circuit in victories last year and has been winning a lot more often than Brad Keselowski. What do you make of hearing that, and how does that kind of blend into who Brad Keselowski is as a person?
Well, I don't doubt it. I've probably spent more time in connection with Brad in NASCAR than I did without him in a lot of ways. You know, he came to Penske about the same time I broke into doing my first NASCAR starts at the end of 2009. I raced for his truck team a little bit in 2010. I was his test driver on the 22 car when he won the championship on his backup driver. From there, we ended up doing the truck series in 2011. I was his test driver for the cup car. I was his test driver in 2012 when he won the Sprint Cup championship. So I've kind of been there through it. I've seen his ascension. You know, I've kind of been a fly on the wall in a lot of places. Some things I didn't get to see, but, you know, definitely being around him was able to kind of pick up on. And, knowing Brad, he's very, very focused on being a leader. When he came into Penske Racing, he came in there with the idea and the objective to get his points across, to walk in there and get the things that he thought had to be done to go out there and win a championship, which happened. I think that really endeared him, obviously, to Penske Racing and Roger Penske. But I think when he first came in there, there was definitely a lot of people that thought, anyone can come in here with a blank sheet or a large rap sheet of things that need to be changed, but will they really execute and will they go out there and perform when they get that? And he did. So fast forwarding to the 22 car in Sprint Cup, I believe he was a big proponent of getting Joe Logano to be the driver of that car. I think he saw Joey as a young guy that could add to the team, add to what they're doing at Penske Racing. But I don't think any driver wants to get beat by their teammate, especially if you hand-picked them. I wouldn't doubt it, but I think Brad's also a smart enough driver to know that he definitely, in terms of would he change what he's doing and that sort of thing, no, I think he knows what makes him successful and what he needs. But it's for anyone in racing, if you know you're in the same equipment and you're not the one doing the best, that can eat away at you just in the side of being a human and a competitor. So I don't doubt it, but I think, right now he can silence that feeling for now.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you hit on it right there, Parker. That's something that we've heard about, too, with Jeff Gordon and Jimmy Johnson. I mean, Jimmy Johnson probably doesn't become a six-time champion if Jeff Gordon doesn't say, that's my guy. And in the case of Joey Logano, from all accounts that we've heard, and as you just mentioned, it seems like he probably doesn't drive for Team Penske unless Brad Keselowski goes to the brain trust and says, this is really the guy that I want as my teammate and I should look at. And I'm sure,
yep.
I mean, you can speak to this as a racing driver. That's got to be frustrating to basically handpick the guy you want to race against you in exactly the same car, knowing that a situation can unfold like it did last year, where even though Brad Keselowski is the guy with the championship, it's, we all know this is, what have you done for me lately? And I'm sure it's more difficult when you're getting beat week in, week out by the guy that you wanted to be your teammate.
Yeah, and I think, Nate, if I were to ask you, if you're going for the same story and as a journalist and someone scoops you on the story, I assume, and you had the same option or same interview time with the person, wouldn't that, that would upset you in some way, just because that's your job to go out there and get the best of something, right?
Right.
Even if you're given the same tool. So, I mean, you definitely hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's one of those things where, if you're given all the same tools and all the same opportunities, then, if you're not having the same success, you can question yourself, you can question the other people around you who have the same tools that, are working the same tools as the other team. But I think that the just really successful drivers we see out there, that when they go in tough times or successful teams, they don't start doing that, questioning every little thing. Mm-hmm. They know what's made them successful, they stick to it, and sure enough, it comes around again. And I think, you'll see that with that two car. And a lot of times it just takes a small breakthrough to cut through some of the, a lot of times it can be luck. At the end of the day, there's so many variables in racing. I saw James Hinchcliffe had an article out here just the recent couple days, and he said something about, you know, there were so many variables as a race car driver that we become control freaks, that if we can control 10 of those 1,000 variables, we feel like we've got it all under control. But there's still thousands of variables out there that we just don't have control of, and that's the luck factor. And I think, you know, that can always factor in.
Yeah. Do we sometimes maybe overlook this, Parker? I mean, in Formula One, that there's no bones about it, that there's two teammates and it's cutthroat. I mean, you are judged by whether or not only you outfinish the guy you're racing against, but how you do in every practice session and qualifying. It's all about where do you stack up against the guy who's driving the same car. Do we miss that dynamic sometimes, do you think, in NASCAR because there is so much more focus on, I think, team and teamwork maybe than other racing series?
You hit the nail. No, definitely. And that's the thing, because we put such a bigger emphasis on the human element of the racing and of motorsports. Whereas Formula One, it is so technologically advanced. There's so much data, computerization, et cetera, that it really comes down to if you don't go as fast as your teammate, you're doing something wrong, and you'll know exactly what he's doing, so you need to go out there and mimic exactly what he's doing. That's the problem. You know, for NASCAR, one, we don't, you know, the data has sort of crept in, but two, at the end of the day, there's such a large human element that there's no way to pinpoint exactly what you're behind on, right?
Right.
And also, the cars are not as consistent. You know, our cars have a lot more dynamicism to them. You know, there's a lot more moving parts in terms of, you know, I'm trying to think of the way to put this. In terms of the things that can change, you know, a lot of things in F1, they try to make it as static as possible. That's what achieves the best lap time and the best speed over the course of a run, and it limits the human element, right?
Right.
For us, our rules are designed to keep the human element a part of it. To keep, you know, why don't we have pit speed limiters like Kurt Busch asked the other day? Because it's a human element. It's one thing you could make a mistake on. Why don't we have one single lug nut like every other racing series? Because there's a human element of having five that pick crew has to hit. We keep that in there, one, for the entertainment factor, and I think, two, because it does keep humans a part of it, and that, for me, makes it a sport more than just a technological show.
Right, right.
Long story short, that does get away from comparing teammate to teammate too much, which we just don't do as much.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's an interesting way to look at it. I didn't even consider the static versus moving parts side of the equation, but that's very true. One more thing I want to touch on with Brad Keselowski before we move on. I remember you saying this to me once. You've driven for both Brad Keselowski and the defending Sprint Cup Series champion Kyle Busch, and you once said something to me that really struck me, and I'm sure would surprise a lot of people. Is these guys maybe have more in common than people realize, and we know that they've certainly had their differences on the track, but tell me and, you know, tell the listeners, like, what did you see in driving for both of those guys, Brad Keselowski and Kyle Busch, that makes them similar?
Well, without getting myself in trouble.
don't worry about that, man.
I'm talking about two champions here, but no, I would say this. They are more similar than you would think, and I would go down to saying that they are very much the same person in terms of being a competitor. Both of them want to win more than anything. They live, breathe, eat, and consume racing and NASCAR racing. That is their sole thing in life. It is the sole thing that's driven them and gotten them where they are, and that is what they continually focus on. But how they go about that is different. You know, what you find with Brad is that he looks at the mental side of racing. He looks at the mental side of the sport, as I say a lot of times, and how him and himself and Paul Wolf won that championship in 2012 was by outsmarting and out-innovating the 48 team. Kyle Busch is more in the sense of more, you know, in your face, this is what you got. This is, you know, it's very much a, there's not much hidden behind the scenes in terms of that he's going to put it all on the line out there and try and force his way into the win. But I think the way they conduct themselves amongst their teams, the way they conduct themselves as human beings, I just find that when I was with them, they reminded me a lot of each other as racers. And it was just two different approaches, but at the end of the day, they were both diehard racers that really struck me as being a lot more similar than we'd think.
Yeah, definitely so. And certainly both of them had success Sunday at Las Vegas with Brad Keselowski making that winning move on Kyle Busch. He faded to fourth, but still got his third straight top five to open his title defense. And you know, a lot of the talk about Sunday's race, Parker, certainly was the low downforce package. And I think there was mostly positive reaction to it. I thought it was a little bit mixed. If you listen to some of the drivers, certainly Brad Keselowski and Dale Earnhardt Jr. really spoke positively about it, but Carl Edwards, who of course didn't finish as well, expressed that he would have liked to have even more downforce off, as I know he's been calling for that for a long time, and I know you're on his side. What do you make so far of what we've seen in the past 2 weeks with a low downforce?
Well, I mean, Brad mentioned it in his interview to Kelly Stavast on NASCAR America, where he said, you know, it definitely had an effect. It was definitely different, but we could do better, you know? And I think it's just in the vein of let's keep taking it off. I think we are starting NASCAR Sprint Cup Racing could hopefully start a rhetoric and a change and a thought process change throughout all of motorsports worldwide by showing, as we take this downforce off, I guarantee you this racing is going to get better. And I think you're seeing that. You know, the drivers are asking for it. I think Vegas was markedly better than we saw last year or 2014. If you look at that last run, you had the 2 car ran behind the 22 car so closely for at least 15 laps of that run that I was actually mind-boggled, because in years past, and Joey Meyer and Brad Keselowski came up with this term when I was at Team Penske, and that was this bubble, whereas if you got in a certain range of the car in front of you, if they took your line away or suddenly, and you could be 2 to 3, maybe 4 tenths faster than that car, when you caught them and got in that bubble, if you didn't break through the bubble and get to their rear spoiler and move them out of the way quickly, you were going to slow down to their speed, and there was no way you were going to pass them. And this is what we fought for the last 5, even 10 years now. And suddenly, what I saw in Vegas was that didn't exist as much. You saw that 2 car run behind the 22 car and be able to save his and conserve his equipment, conserve his tires, get by him, and drive on to catch the 18. I haven't seen that in years past. And I looked even further back. The 3 car, the 48, they were starting to catch. And if you looked how close all top five of those cars were at the end of the run and in terms of speeds, it was remarkable compared, I believe, to 2014. I haven't done the statistics on it, but I would say that they were either closer than they've been in recent years, or they were able to run closer for the whole period of the run than we've ever seen. So I just think this is going the right direction. We also saw, you know, one of the things Jeff Burton mentioned on NASCAR America was that in the old package, when Kyle Busch was getting caught by Brad Keselowski, he could have just moved his line, taken Brad's line away, and probably held him off for another 5 laps, maybe the entirety of the race. And instead, there was no way. There's no way, because the aero didn't matter as much, that if he went in front of him, Brad was still just going to get there with his mechanical grip, move the 18 out of the way, and continue going on. And that's what really looked different to me, and I think this is just awesome. I'm so pumped for the sport right now. It's really revitalized, you know, so many things, I think, about some tracks where we think we're going to have a boring race, and suddenly in my mind I'm thinking, wow, this could be something spectacular or something we haven't seen in a long time. And that's really been cool for me, and I'm just so pumped. I think it's going to be really cool
going forward. Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, visually the results have been there, the way drivers have been campaigning and lobbying for them, as you said, like the tire fall off and everything does create that potential for more passing and not getting stalled out the way you were saying Joey Meyer and Brad Keselowski were describing it, that bubble. That certainly didn't seem to be evident Sunday. And like you said, like as Jeff Burton said, I mean, it doesn't seem as if that the leader had that just unbeatable advantage. One thing I do want to ask you about, though, in terms of the tire fall-off, I mean, certainly it seemed like that it was evident softer tire was having an impact Sunday. But I thought it was interesting that in the case of 3 of the top 5 finishers, Keselowski, runner-up Joey Logano, fifth-place car of Austin Dillon, none of those guys stopped when everybody took 2 on that under that final caution. And yet they were still – I mean, granted, they had changed 4 the stop before that, and the cars that took 2 that finished around them, like Kyle Busch, had done 2 and 2 on their last 2 stops. What do you make of that? How do you explain that to the fan? I mean, tire fall-off obviously was more of a factor, but yet the cars that stayed out – were the ones that finished 1-2.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was interesting because it looked like early in the race, 2 tires wasn't even going to work. When the 11 tried it, and, you know, we saw that, and it was like, oh, like, well, there is a lot of fall-off here. I think some of that I'll be honest, had to do with the changing conditions. I think if it was a hot, sunny day like they practiced in, you would have seen them all over the racetrack, and that probably wouldn't have worked as well. But I think some of that also went with, you know, they conserved their tires. They didn't run a lot of laps before they had that pit, comparatively to a run. And, I mean, at the end of the day, Vegas is a low abrasion surface. You know, it's just not going to have the same, you know, abrasiveness as the other surfaces. But we also had no tire failures there that weekend. So if I'm sitting there and I'm looking at that and saying, hey, look, you know, we want a softer tire with more fall-off, so you look and say, these tires look pretty good over the course of a run. These guys were even able to double stint them, you know, able to just continue on further than we thought a fuel run would be. So why don't we come back here something a little more, or a little less, you know, a little less hard, you know, something that wears a little more. And I think that's definitely something that Goodyear's doing. You know, this might have been the first stab at this situation with this downforce package and thing, and now they look at it and say, hey, you know what, we probably could get away a little more, and it's just going to get better. And if we take more downforce off, the car slides around more, they lower the corner speeds, they go to a softer tire. It's all going to happen, but we're just seeing the start of it, and I think it's encouraging what we're seeing, but obviously it's not all going to happen right away overnight. You know, Rome wasn't built overnight. This isn't going to happen overnight.
Right, certainly not. You mentioned Goodyear, Parker, and that brings up something that I did want to ask you about. This is somewhat technical, and I made the mistake of trying to explain it on Twitter last night to several fans, despite...
Uh-oh,
covering this stuff, yeah, I know. I'm already making you nervous. Despite covering this stuff for 14 years, I of course have no idea how it actually works in terms of the cars themselves. So we know that removing downforce allows Goodyear to build a softer tire because they're not worried about all these forces conspiring to keep the car glued to the ground. But we also know that teams are going to regain some of this downforce. They already regained some of it, like, through the off season, from what I understand, like with their little tricks of they go underneath the car and they find little tiny areas that all stack up to give them a lot of the counts of downforce back that they lost. Can you explain, like, how that still works? That, I mean, it's almost like you're removing downforce so Goodyear can build the softer tire. But as teams gain it back, it's not in a way that's maybe as harmful as the original way that the downforce was on the car that prevented Goodyear from you know, building a softer tire. Does that make sense?
No, that makes complete sense. Two things. First and foremost, you know, people always say, well, you know, why do the teams keep finding this new area? Well, if you're forced to look somewhere else, you'll find something. I always go back to, you know, the robbers are always ahead of the cops, right? Because...
right.
They got the leg up. We're trying to skirt the rules. They're trying to react to what we find, being NASCAR. So, you know, that's our job as racers. And all the engineers that we employ and the crew chiefs and, you know, the organizations, we employ all that because we want to find ways to maximize the rules to make the car as fast as possible. There will be a turning point where that doesn't happen. You know, if you were to cut off that rear spoiler, cut off the front pan and the splitter, suddenly you would have a massive drop in downforce that we couldn't possibly get back, or at least I wouldn't believe so, within the current rules. So there's, you know, it's probably where we're at a mixed point right now. But I, from what I've heard, it's not that we gained everything back. You also have to take in the factor of that if we're putting softer tires on them, that's a lot of mechanical grip. And we're allowing not only to, you know, that, but we're allowing these cars to have a lot less drag. And when they have less drag, they can go faster on the straightaway. So add those things all together, and yes, the lap times can be close and get, you know, considerably close to what we had when we were super high downforce. But it's different in that sense, you know. And it's only, as I keep saying, it's only going to continue down the path of where they want it to go. We just got to keep continuing to make steps. What I look at is the side skirts. I've never understood the side skirts. I don't know why we need them. That might be another change. But, hey, you know, that's we'll see what happens here going forward. I just love how open NASCAR is to listening, what's happening. And when in the last 10 years have we had drivers get out of cars and be so continually positive about what we're racing and what they're getting to race? I just think it's all good stuff. I mean, the fact that we're having this conversation, like, hey, maybe we could take more off. Yeah, like, let's do it. Like, that's awesome. This is not happening anywhere else in the world. Formula One right now is talking about adding downforce to create their cars to make them 7 seconds faster to make better racing. And they had most of their drivers, everyone come out and say, what are you talking about? If you add more downforce, we're going to go faster to the corner and we can't even get closer than we are now. So, you know, it's definitely funny to see that, you know, we're not always thought of being the most technologically advanced form of racing, but right now I'm telling you we're leading the charge in something that's going to hopefully ripple throughout the entire motorsports world.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, it's certainly a huge change in the tenor of the conversation versus 9 years ago when the Car of Tomorrow was coming on the scene. And you're right, it's night and day. And it's a good point about drag as well. Somebody was trying to explain that to me last night. And is your contention, I mean, would you agree with Carl Edwards, speaking of like reducing drag, would it make sense to you just to knock off the spoiler completely as he seems inclined to do? Would that make sense as maybe a final pathway forward too?
Nate, let me ask you a question. When you walk through the parking lot of a NASCAR Sprint Cup Series race, the fan parking lot, how many cars have spoilers and splitters on them? If this is a stock car, then let's race stock cars. Get rid of the spoilers. They add nothing to the show. They add nothing to the ability of the, you know, to relate to the road car. You know, at the end of the day, if you look at where racing is, if tomorrow, I think you and I talked about this before, but if tomorrow you told us, hey, no rules, build the fastest car you can. We build a car that would go 450 miles an hour around Las Vegas Motor Speedway. The driver would need a G-suit, and he would be able to go 500 miles probably on a tank of fuel, right? Because
right.
We have that technology. So no longer are we being the leaders in developing that, and we know the speed that we could achieve if the rules are open. So now let's take the rules and say, why are we containing ourselves in a box? Let's make the rules we know that will make the best racing, the best entertainment product possible, the best thing that the drivers enjoy driving, the fans enjoy watching, the teams enjoy working on, and then create some excitement about the fact that we're doing this in the idea of having a great, awesome product out there. And I think that's where we're going. And, you know, getting rid of splitters and spoilers and that sort of thing only gets us closer to that, to say, you know, we're more about providing something that is great to watch, is great to be a part of, and great to be, you know, as a driver in, and, you know, going forward to create the best, most healthy sport possible.
Yeah, no question. And I think you're right. I mean, certainly, again, like visually, I think what we've seen so far on track this year has been encouraging in that regard. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, there's been some interesting drama over the past week off the track with Furniture Row Racing, which, of course, got busted 2 weeks in a row for roof flap violations, and they were different in nature, but the second one, unfortunately for the team, resulted in their crew chief, Cole Pearn, being suspended for a race. And Pearn was at Las Vegas, Parker, as you know, because they elected to appeal so that they could defer to the suspension until the appeal hearing occurred. Well, today, the team decided it wasn't going to appeal, and therefore, Cole Pearn won't be with them in Phoenix. It strikes me, and it's struck some other observers, that this seems like a rather shrewd move on the part of Furniture Row Racing, that they basically, all this cost them was a $500 non-refundable appeal fee. What do you make of it? I mean, you're somebody who certainly studies the nuances of racing. I mean, is this something that, do you think other teams look at that and think, man, that's smart. They kept their crew chief for like a really important mile and a half race that had a test session on the Thursday before, or do you think there's a little irritation when they see something like this happen?
You know, it can go either way. I mean, look, kudos to them if they fully intended to do what we think, which was to have Cole Pearn there for the test, to be a part of a mile and a half race, which they think, you know, they could go out and get a win, considering Martin Truex is excellent on a mile and a half, and it seems like the program's really on right now, then, you know what, like, it's being that innovative and knowing that they've got themselves in a bad position through, you know, not following the rules. Hey, look, more kudos to them.
Yeah.
I think it's cool, you know, smart on them. Will the rule change maybe going forward? If you really look at this one, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, it's up. They're fully doing everything that's within the rules. You know, they're allowed to appeal, which then he's allowed to come to the track until the appeal is heard and a final verdict has come down. And there's nothing to stop them, I guess, in this sense, to say, hey, you know what? We don't want to do that appeal. New information came out over the weekend. You know what? You guys, we'll take the suspension, we'll take the fine, and we'll move on. So,
right.
Another fact that it could be, you know, more side of more less malicious than saying, hey, we just need a little time, you know, to figure out what we're going to do.
Right.
That could be as simple as that. You know, it could be to say, hey, you know what? We don't know who we're going to make the crew chief in this for a week. Does this work out? You know, where do we want to, you know, do we have anyone? So I think that could be another side of it. But, hey, look, I think they've worked fully within the rules. They're going to accept their penalty for what they've done. They admit to doing them. If they don't feel like they can be as successful at Phoenix and it's kind of a race that they might be able to take a, you know, take the best they can get, then, this is within their power to do.
Yeah, no question. And in fairness, I should note that, like, in its release, the team did say that team president Joe Garrone had sought clarification from NASCAR. That was initially when they said they were going to appeal last week. They said they wanted more of an understanding, and apparently the team release said that he had a meeting with NASCAR officials, and they came to apparently an understanding they felt was comfortable enough that they didn't have to appeal.
And you know what? It could be that simple, too. That was another factor I didn't think. You know, they could have been. I know Joe Garrone came on NASCAR America, and I was there that day, and it didn't seem like they fully understood for the Vegas one fully understood exactly, or if there was a way that they maybe had, you know, they could explain how that part ended up there, et cetera. But obviously, they came out to their meeting and thought, you know what, we've made an infraction. We're not going to win this. Let's move on.
Yep.
Take, you know, bite the bullet and move on.
Yep. Well, nonetheless, we know that Todd Barrier will be calling the shots on race day this weekend at Phoenix for Martin Truex Jr. And certainly at Phoenix, we're expecting that Kevin Harvick, I believe he's won 4 of the last 5 at this track. I would think he comes in as the favorite, Parker, despite the new rules. But do you think would there be any challenge there for Kevin Harvick, knowing that the lower downforce might change the equation, or do you think he keeps his edge?
Have we seen Kevin Harvick have any problems in the last 2 years, really, that slowed him down? I mean, if we look at the low downforce races, he's done great those. You know, I mean, last season they picked up right where they left off this season. He's been right up there. Himself, Rodney Childers, and that 4 team seem to be, setting the benchmark very high for the other teams out there. I know they haven't been in victory lane as much as they'd like, with as many second places as they've had. But as I've said before, you can look at that as a glass half empty or glass half full. And really, for them, they've got to probably look at the glass half full, because if you're finishing second as many times as they have, you're doing something right. You just take a little bit more to execute there. But I mean, do I think the rule changes or has hit? Car solely been why he's winning at Vic? No, he won there in Richard Childress equipment. He's won there in this current equipment at SHR. I just think Kevin Harvick really gels the Phoenix Raceway. He's from, you know, the West Coast. That sort of the flat 3 and 4. He has a very unique line through 3 and 4 there. He also has a unique line in 1 and 2. I remember watching, I believe it was 2012. I was standing on the spotter stand. With Team Penske, Roger Penske, and Tim Cindric one time during the Xfinity race, and he was running the Xfinity race in one of the RCR cars, and he ran a completely different line in 1 and 2, but he was by far the best car in 1 and 2, and it really stuck out to me. He was a lot lower, he was using a lot more of the apron, and it just looked like this. Sometimes drive, you know, they say there's horses for different courses, right?
Yeah.
And I hate to use weird, bold analogies, but cliche analogies, but it's really true, because sometimes as a driver, you just gel the place. It just clicks. There's no rhyme or reason. Maybe you can look at your background or what, but for whatever reason, that racetrack and him and Harvick have clicked. And if you look at the way he has a unique driving style that is his own everywhere, I could get very technical and describe a lot of what he does. He has a lot earlier turn-ins than people. He uses a lot more brake on the car. He stabs far a lot harder. Just a lot of things, but it works for him. And he knows it, and he's perfected it. It's like a golfer with a swing. You know, it's maybe hard to see to the layman. Like, I can't look at Tiger Woods and tell you why his swing is different than Phil Mickelson's. But for a golfer out there, they can definitely look and see it, right? As a driver, I can see some things. I've seen some of his data. It's definitely unique. I don't see, unless they're off as a group at Stuart Haas Racing, or the 4 cars come with some outlandish setup, I don't see why Kevin Harvick won't pick up right where he's left off at Phoenix.
Right. That's an interesting analogy too, Parker. I mean, I tell people all the time that covering racing is not like covering baseball or basketball. I can tell why Steph Curry has a beautiful jump shot. I can tell why Ken Griffey Jr.'s swing in baseball was maybe the most perfect ever. I can't look at Harvick the way you can and tell what makes him so good. So appreciate you.
It is tough, man. It's very acquired. You know, in some of it, you know, some of it's a lot of inside baseball, though. I'll say, you know, there are some people who are very good at watching a race car. You know, there's crew chiefs out there that I've had that have maybe driven just a little bit, but they'll watch a race car and they'll see things that I didn't even feel in the car. And I'm like, hey, wow, how'd you see that?
Right.
And then it's true, right? And or they'll all, before I've even said something, they'll tell me, and I said, I was just going to say that same thing. And that's just really remarkable. But a lot of it's inside baseball and the fact that, you know, data acquisition for us is the trace of what we do in the car. And if you're a driver, I was brought up on the open wheel side where we had the data acquisition from the first race car I ever drove. And so I became very adept at it, understanding it. And so when I moved around a little bit and I got to do the backup driver role for Kurt Busch at Stewart Haas, I got to see some of Kevin Harvick's data. I saw it one other time before that for another reason. And it really stuck out to me, you know, how unique he was. Then from there, I understood kind of like what he was doing on the racetrack line-wise and being behind him. But if I were just to watch every lap and every time, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that just from watching him, what he does with the pedals. You know, that's inside baseball.
Yeah, so. It's interesting. It's interesting to me, at least. Speaking of watching, when people watch Phoenix with this lower downforce package, are they going to see anything different, anything you'll be watching for Sunday?
You know, I thought about it. I think you could, for sure. I mean, the speeds in 3 and 4 will definitely be lower. Could allow you to move around a little bit more. When I did the race in 2014, one of the things really stuck out to me was that we were able to move the line around in Cup a lot in 3 and 4. And I think, you know, you'll just see a little bit more of that, maybe a little bit more diamonding in 3 and 4 for a lot of drivers. Jimmy Johnson's big about doing that. You might see him move up. And then 1 and 2, I think the same thing. You know, the speeds probably will be, you know, depending on the tire, I mean, I always have to go back to the tire, but I think it could be a certain effect there. The braking zones, you know, you'll probably be a little bit longer. So it changes everything. You know, it might just allow a little bit more off-throttle time, a little bit more time on the brake, all of which can add up to a little bit more ability to pass, and that's what we've been working on. So it might not be glaringly different, but, you know, it really depends on the tire, but it definitely should be different than what we've seen.
Right. Obviously, unfortunately, again, no trucks this weekend, everybody, so you'll have to wait a few more weeks to see Parker Kligerman back behind the wheel. But
thanks for reminding me.
Well, again, you're going to enjoy that points leader mojo all the way through the end of this month. But in the meantime, Xfinity Series, of course, is running each week with Cup. And although I know the storyline there has remained the same, Parker, with Cup guys, of course, winning the races, there is a little bit of a different development there in terms of the points with the Xfinity's new chase system coming into play this year. And I'll let you explain, you know, what you've seen there, what that means.
Yeah, well, first of all, if you say Cup guys, we might be a little bit off. It's been just basically Kyle Busch. I know Chase Elliott won Daytona, but let's be honest,
that's true.
Kyle Busch, guy led 199 out of 200 laps. If that wasn't at his hometown, I think they would have thrown him out of the place. But that was very impressive. But, no, it is cool. And, you know, fans have asked me in the last couple months, you know, okay, what do you think about the chase being brought to trucks and being brought to Xfinity? And trucks, I think it's going to be very intense because I think you're going to have more than 8 winners this season, or at least get close. But if you look at the equipment and the amount of talented drivers in trucks this year, I definitely think you'll see more than 8. So you're going to either have to win multiple races or win and have better points than trucks to make the top 8. In Xfinity, obviously, historically, we have not seen Xfinity regulars win races in the abundance that we'd have more than 12 winners. But what it does do, and it, you know, to me, it's no different than what we always talk about. It is points. It's going to be about points. But the interesting thing to me is when you look back at the 12th place position, and that's so cool because we'd never be talking about these guys. Well, who's back there right now? You've got Jeremy Clements, who's 12th. His is a very small family-run team. It's got basically, I think, 3 employees.
Hmm.
His dad is the crew chief. His dad is the engine builder. They built their own engines, and they're sitting there in the chase right now. Behind him, you have Ross Chastain, who's, I believe, 13th or 14th, one of the two. I can't remember off the top of my head. And he's on that JD Motorsports team that last year I think finished about 20th in points, 21st. And suddenly, you know, we're talking about him being like, hey, this is a fringe contender. And this is a very small team, and it would be a huge deal if they were to lock themselves in the chase and lock themselves 12th in points. If they never went further than that in the chase and 12th in points, it'd be about 10 positions better than that team's ever finished. So, I mean, it's really impressive. I take that back. It'd be about 7 positions because Landon Castle finished 12th that team.
Gotcha.
2 years ago.
Right.
But, you know, that's cool. And then you look back and you got Bubba Wallace, who's had a, you know, not the best start right now, but he is in a fully funded Roush Fenway ride, you know, top of the line deal. And he's back there now having to fight against these different smaller teams. I just think it's an incredible dynamic that's brought to the series to be talking about these guys and these smaller teams that we wouldn't be doing right now on the third race. You know, we'd be talking about Daniel Suarez, we'd be talking about Eric Jones, we'd be talking about Brandon Jones and Justin Allgaier, which we really do, because of the top five, but these guys would be so far back points-wise by the fifth race, we wouldn't even mention it. You know, it'd be cool if Jeremy Clemens was still in the top 10, we'd maybe talk about it, but now we're talking about 12th through 10th in that area, 15th, and it's really brought light to that, and I think that's only a good thing for the sport. And for the fans out there that do care about, you know, the smaller teams that constantly hit me up, hit you up, probably hit a lot of us up about talking about them more. This is going to do that, and that's what you need to be excited about. Is it's going to give us a reason and a reason to pay attention, and to you know, to be able to sell it to people to say this is what's happening, and I think that's a good deal.
Yeah, I mean that certainly makes my job easier when I have the Jeremy Clements or the Ross Chastain stories. Those are stories that write themselves, and I know that when NASCAR has tried to go directionally in finding better storylines over the last several years, I think that's been part of their goal. I think underdog storylines are what sells. And it's not just for people like me in the news media. I mean, as you alluded to at the top, Parker, for a team that has 3 employees, even if you haven't won yet, if you can just stand on a street corner and proclaim, hey, I'm going to be a part of the championship hunt. I'm going to be in the playoffs. People relate to that term. And that can really make a difference. I mean, essentially, like, yes, it's a little bit of an artificial construct, but essentially what NASCAR has given these teams an opportunity to do by instituting the playoffs is given them a way to sell themselves in a new way that, you know, you would hope might attract more money, right?
And you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly right. I mean, it can't be explained any other way than, and I didn't even think about it that far, that, you know, if Jeremy Clements makes the chase, come the time, you know, the cutoff race, the first race, he's in the chase, suddenly he can go to his sponsors, whoever, and be like, hey, look, his supporters, like, look, we made the case for one of the 12 best cars. We're not going to finish any worse than 12. Or I guess, actually, the rules do change that you get moved out. But anyways, the fact of the matter is he has a chance to be a part of the playoffs. He's going to be a part of all the media that goes with that, all the things, and that's only a positive. And I think that's a great thing. You know, it's hard to justify sometimes, and I'm a huge proponent sometimes in Cup of explaining that, you know, unlike the NFL, where it's team versus team, where you can point out the day that the Jacksonville Jaguars beat, I don't know, the Giants, right? To say, wow, that was a really good day for them. You know, like that, you can talk about that and explain exactly why that was a good day. But for us, all our teams play on the same field every race, right? So explaining to someone when a car like Front Row Motorsports, 38 car, Landon Castle, if he goes out and finishes 15th, explaining to someone why that's a huge day is hard, right?
Right.
And or even the next Xfinity series, explaining why Jeremy Clements fighting to be in the top 10 in points is a big deal. That's a hard thing to do. But if suddenly, like you said, we can say, well, you know, well, this is big because they're starting to play around the championship guys. These are the guys that are in the chase. They're going to go to the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. It changes the rhetoric a little bit and just makes it easier for other people to understand. So I think that's a cool thing. I know it's a great thing for them, but hopefully the fans understand that, to, you know, embrace it to say, okay, you know, this makes sense to bring some light to these guys that do work very hard, that do great things, just, you know, at the end of the day, they don't have the funding or the budget to do it at the front of the field.
Yeah, it certainly bears watching regardless, and I think you articulated well right there as to the reason why. Well, speaking of watching, we're taping this on a Tuesday, and Parker is about to head into makeup, because he's got NASCAR America to do, so you'll be watching him on TV. So I want to let you go and do that, and certainly know you've got many of those appearances coming up before you're back behind the wheel. So I hope that every time you're on NASCAR America, you're making sure they're allowing you to savor. You are the Truck Series points leader through the end of this month.
Believe me, I haven't let anyone forget it out there. I was hanging out with my friends the other day, and I was like, hey, look, you know you're hanging out with the number one Truck Series racer in the world, so I just want you guys to know that at this point in time. To just, you know, if you want to buy this dinner, thank you. No, it's cool. It's been a lot of fun. Excited to be on NASCAR America in a little bit and continue doing what we're doing here and bringing, you know, fans new insights like this and this podcast. I hope they enjoy this podcast. You do a great job with it, Nate. I enjoy being on it, and thanks to all the fans that listen out there. Hopefully, when we get back on track in Martinsville, we'll be able to continue our good run here and stay there and lead at the points, or at least in the top five. It'd be a good day to come out there with, because I think we're gonna have some great runs in these next four.
Outstanding. So. Sounds good, Parker. We appreciate you being on. Thanks for giving us so much of your time, and we'll definitely have you back. Thanks again.
Appreciate it, Dave. Thanks.